The content of this program is intended for people who are blind, have low vision, or print disabilities. Hello, I'm Doris Hyde for the North Carolina Reading Services. For the next half hour, I will be presenting the latest vision news. Today's vision news is underwritten by the Apex Lions Club, serving the community since 1937 by providing services and financial support for people who are blind, have low vision, or print disabilities. To learn more about the services provided by the Apex Lions Club, go to apexlions.org. First up, from the Assistive Technology Community for the Blind and Visually Impaired Facebook group, posted by Alan Chase, spread the word, please. We have the greatest need at the moment in the Raleigh and Morehead City area. The Early Learning Sensory Support Program for children with hearing and visual impairments is looking for a teacher of the visually impaired to serve children and families birth to three, with some potential services to preschool and school-age children. This is an itinerant position that will provide services primarily in homes and some child care centers. Preferred applicants have a current NC teaching license with the visual impairment distinction. Please refer to the job posting for more specific details regarding the position and to apply. Here's the job posting. At governmentjobs.com, teacher of the visually impaired, description of work. This is a re-advertisement. Previous applicants are still under consideration and do not need to reapply. The mission of the Department of Public Instruction. The Department of Public Instruction, NCDPI, is charged with implementing the state's public school laws for pre-kindergarten through 12th grade public schools at the direction of the State Superintendent of Public Instruction and State Board of Education. The North Carolina Department of Public Instruction is seeking applicants for a school educator class 2, working title, Teacher of the Visually Impaired. For our Office of Exceptional Children, Sensory Support, and Assistive Technology section, Early Learning Sensory Support Program. The Office of Exceptional Children provides general supervision, professional learning, and technical assistance to all location education and agencies, including charter schools, state-operated programs, the Innovative School District, lab schools, and other state agencies and approved private agencies that provide special education to children and youth classified as disabled. The Early Learning Sensory Support Program for Children with Hearing and Vision Impairments, ELSSP, within the SSAT section, is a statewide early intervention educational program supporting young children, their families, and the providers who work with them through the provision of direct instruction and consultation. The primary purpose of the position is to provide itinerant early intervention and education services to children eligible to receive special education and related services for vision loss under Parts C and B of the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, IDEA. The position primarily serves children ages birth to 5 years, but can be expanded based on need and capacity. The position is required to serve children in their home, daycare, and/or public school. This position is remote-based and requires up to 90% travel and will be supporting District 3, North Central, NC. This position requires access to reliable internet in order to conduct business using web-based platforms. Note, to receive credit for your work history and credentials, you must list the information on the State of North Carolina application in the Education and Work Experience sections of the application form. Any information omitted from the application cannot be considered for qualifying credit. NCDPI welcomes attached or incorporated resumes, cover letters, and reference information, but these items will not be used for screening for qualifying credit. Please make sure the application is completed in full. See resume or see attachment will not be accepted. EEO statement. The State of North Carolina and the Department of Public Instruction provides equal employment opportunities to all employees and applicants for employment and prohibits discrimination and harassment of any type without regard to race, color, religion, age, sex, national origin, disability status, genetics, protected veteran status, sexual orientation, gender identity or expression, or any other characteristic protected by federal, state, or local laws. This policy applies to all terms and conditions of employment, including recruiting, hiring, placement, promotion, termination, layoff, recall, transfer, leaves of absence, compensation, and training. knowledge, skills, abilities, / competencies. Documented experience in public education, teaching children birth to 2 and or 3 to 21. Documented experience with federal and or state special education policies, practices, and or procedures. For example, IDEA Parts B and or C. Demonstrated experience utilizing and or managing web-based applications and or databases. For example, Microsoft Office software, Google, Apple software. Minimum education and experience requirements. Some state job postings say you can qualify by an equivalent combination of education and experience. If that language appears below, then you may qualify through either years of education or years of directly related experience or a combination of both. See oshr.nc.gov/experience-guide for details. Master's degree from an accredited college or university in one of the following fields: special education, birth kindergarten education, early childhood education, education, visual impairment education, psychology, and or other related fields, and a North Carolina teaching license in the area of special education / visual impairment, or the qualifications to obtain license to teach in North Carolina. Salary is based on experience and education of the applicant. Supplemental and contact information. All applicants must complete and submit a state application for employment using the NEOGOV online job application system. Job opportunities, sorted by job title ascending, careers, governmentjobs.com, for the state of North Carolina. Any applications not received by the advertisement closing date and time will not be accepted outside of the portal. To receive credit for work history and credentials, the applicant must list the information on the online application form. Any information omitted from the application cannot be considered for qualifying credit. NCDPEI welcomes attached or incorporated resumes, cover letters, and reference information, but these items will not be used for screening for qualifying credit. Please make sure the application is completed in full. If you put C resume or C attachment on your application instead of a completed application with detailed work duties, your application will not be accepted. Other attachments, except a DD-214 copy, will also be accepted but not used in screening for qualifying credit. Applicants are required to scan and attach a copy of their DD-214 Form 4 or Certificate of Release or Discharge from Active Duty or Discharge Orders if they wish to obtain Veterans Preference. Reference checks will be performed on all selected candidates. If the position requires a background check and or drug screening, that will also be performed on all selected candidates. Applicants may be subject to a criminal background check. All candidates selected for positions considered positions of trust will be subject to a criminal background check. To check the status of an application, please log in to your NC Government Job Opportunities account and click Application Status. For technical issues with your application, please call the NeoGov helpline at 877-204-4442. If you have a technical issue with your government jobs account, please call their helpline at 1-855-524-5627. Note, all applicants will be communicated with via email only. For updates on the status of their application or any questions on their application, for inquiries, please send questions to valerie.richardson@dpi.nc.gov. If there are any questions about this posting other than your application status, please contact NC Department of Public Instruction Human Resources. Contact information, Valerie B. Richardson Agency, HR Consultant Class 1, Temp. Email, valerie.richardson@dpi.nc.gov. Applications for positions requiring specific coursework must be accompanied by a copy of the applicant's transcript. Applicants with degrees not conferred at a United States college or university must attach verification that their degree is equivalent to a similar degree from a U.S. institution. The Office of State Human Resources uses the National Association of Credential Evaluation Services, NACES, as a referral resource for applicants who need to have their credentials certified as equivalent. For a list of organizations that perform this specialized service, please visit the NACES membership website at http://www.nacees.gov. http://www.naces.org/members.htm. Transcripts, degree evaluations, and cover letters may be uploaded with your application. Posted on Facebook.com by the Real Wheels Facebook group. Casting call. Heritage Minute is looking for blind and visually impaired actors, as well as background actors with amputations. This is a UBCP/ACTRA union production. Child, 8 to 16, open gender, blind or visually impaired actor, must read Braille. Sir Arthur Pearson, 45 to 55, male, blind or visually impaired actor, facial hair is a plus. Background soldiers slash veterans, 20 to 40, male. Blind or visually impaired actors, as well as actors with amputations, all welcome. Please email interest at Haley A. Gray, that's HaleyAgray, at gmail.com. Image description, a navy blue background with white text detailing the Heritage Minute open casting call from Historical Canada and Scopitone Films, that's spelled S-C-O-P-I-T-O-N-E. There are three black and white historical images to accompany each character description. The first image is of a child reading a book in Braille in a classroom. The second image is of Sir Arthur Pearson, a man with circular glasses and a bushy mustache. And the third image is of four soldiers in uniform, each holding a white cane. From PBS.org, that's PBSNC.org, from American Masters, a special broadcast of ProTactile, A Language of Touch, premieres July 25th, and you'll have to check local listings for times. Join author and disability rights advocate Rebecca Alexander as she meets the founders and educators of ProTactile, a language based solely on touch. Historically, deafblind people have been limited to using interpreters to communicate. With ProTactile, one-on-one and group conversations are not only possible, but they also allow for deeper and more meaningful connection. About Rebecca Alexander, LCSW-R, MPH. Rebecca Alexander is an author, psychotherapist, disability rights advocate, and extreme athlete who has been simultaneously losing both her sight and hearing since she was a child. Now, with only a sliver of light and total deafness without the use of her cochlear implants, Rebecca has a thriving psychotherapy practice with two master's degrees from Columbia University. In addition to narrating the PBS American Masters documentary Becoming Helen Keller, October 2021, Rebecca has been featured on many TV shows and in numerous publications. She has been honored with prestigious awards for her advocacy work, presented for TEDx, and has served as the keynote speaker for many esteemed companies and organizations. Among her many feats, Rebecca participated in the 600-mile AIDS life cycle ride, summited Mount Kilimanjaro, swam from Alcatraz to shore in the San Francisco Bay, and competed in the civilian military combine races. Rebecca's critically acclaimed award-winning memoir, Not Fade Away, A Memoir of Senses Lost and Found, is currently in development to be made into a motion picture. From the HastingsCenter.org, posted July 9th by Kailani S. Schulman and Joseph J. Finns. That's K-A-I-U-L-A-N-I-S-S-H-U-L-M-A-N and Joseph J. Finns, F-I-N-S. Posted in Disability Ethics, Hastings Bioethics Forum. Bioethics Forum Essay. Most of us have a weakness for a donut and coffee in the morning, but not everyone places their order in the same way. One young man we know uses an application on his iPad to communicate his preferences, including his predilection for a chocolate frosted donut and an iced coffee with almond milk. This device allows him to express himself independently, just like everyone else. For this individual and other people with disabilities, augmentative and alternative communication, AAC, devices facilitate communication, which, as we have argued, helps constitute community and societal integration. AACs encompass a range of technologies, such as tablet applications and eye gaze devices. For some individuals, these devices supplement another form of of communication, such as speech or sign language. For others, AACs are their singular means of connecting with the world beyond them. Over the past several years, the Division of Medical Ethics at Weill Cornell Medical College and Blythedale Children's Hospital, BCH, have collaborated to track the process by which children with brain injury and their families acquire access to assistive technology. Our goal was to map the Byzantine process that heretofore had never been charted. We hoped to identify bottlenecks and lead to quality improvement for children with disabilities. Our previous analysis drew from BCH medical records over a two-year period and included 72 children with brain injury who received a prescription for at least one assistive device. Despite the multitude of resources and remarkable clinical expertise available at BCH, we found that only 55% of devices were delivered. Furthermore, the average time to delivery was 69.4 days, with a range of 12 to 250 days. The device with the longest time to delivery was a special needs car seat, a technology that quite literally provides a child with access to the surrounding community. We recently met to continue our research. At a multidisciplinary team meeting, we learned of the process by which a child acquires an AAC device. It's a maddening process. First, the clinician, often a speech-language pathologist, identifies a need and determines what sort of device would be best suited to assist with communication. Then, they prescribe an appropriate device. To ensure that this money is well spent, the insurance company requires a one-month trial of the device before it is approved, and then the vendor supplies the device as required by the insurance company. Makes sense, right? But now, illogic and, we would say, cruelty creeps in. After a successful trial of the device, an intervention that will help a child communicate with their family or go to school, the device is taken away by the insurance company for the duration of the approval process. Let us reiterate what happens. For 1 month, the child is given access to the AAC device that provides them with a previously unavailable mode of communication. For 1 month, they can communicate their wishes to their parents and siblings, respond to their teacher's question in the classroom, or make new friends at the playground. And during that 1 month, they grow and develop as children are prone and ought to do. Maybe they learn to tell jokes, read aloud, or order their favorite breakfast beverage independently. In 2023, clinicians at BCH prescribed 18 AAC devices. Each of the devices was deemed eligible for a particular child and approved by an insurance company for coverage. However, despite the success of the one-month trial period and subsequent insurance approval, the children had to wait to get their devices. The average time to delivery was 9 weeks, with a range of 1 week to 5 months. The device with the longest time to delivery was an eye gaze device. This AAC helps individuals with motor disabilities communicate. These delays to delivery are significant. Education literature suggests that first through eighth grade students lose between 17 and 28% of their English language arts skills and 25% to 34% of their math skills during the three-month summer vacation. While the summer slide experienced by typically developing children is concerning, one can only imagine the devastating impact of delays for children who rely on access to assistive technology. For a child who waits 9 weeks, it's the loss of nearly a whole summer. When the delay is 5 months, that's a couple of summers. Furthermore, children with cognitive or speech disabilities can miss critical neurological milestones when they are unassisted. This compounds the effect of a delay and may lead to repercussions with enduring ill effects. The illogic of this delay leaves us speechless. All the more so because the data from BCH reveals that all the patients who demonstrated improvement during the one-month trial ultimately received their devices. So why the wait? Why impede their development? And why the cruelty? After these children are given the keys to communication, these keys are taken away. The door is locked and their world goes dark. What had been an opportunity for community and reciprocity is now one for segregation and isolation. How can this be right? To delay these benefits is especially paradoxical because there is a small but growing neuroethics literature arguing in favor of post-trial obligations following device trials that have benefited study participants, whom Goering et al., G-O-E-R-I-N-G, characterize as pioneers. The question of post-trial obligations for as yet unproven devices is now the focus of grants funded by the BRAIN Initiative. This funding priority represents a normative argument for investigational devices. In the context of AAC, we are delaying access to devices that have already been proved therapeutically effective. Beyond the ethics, we contend that these delays are also a matter of law. As we have written, the Americans with Disabilities Act, ADA, mandates maximal societal integration for individuals with disabilities. Title IV of the ADA outlines access to assistive technology, naming telecommunications devices for the deaf, also known as teletypewriters, TTY. In 1990, when the ADA became law, TTY was the primary assistive device for communication. With progress in electronics and neuroscience, communication devices have advanced way beyond TTYs. Because of this progress, we must not be stuck in a purely textual reading of the ADA that limits access to more modern technologies. These advances remind us of the Deweyan aphorism that speaks to how technological progress can expand our moral horizons. In Common Sense and Scientific Inquiry, Dewey wrote, "Inventions of new agencies and instruments create new ends. They create new consequences which stir men, all people, to form new purposes." So it is here we are compelled to use the marvels of modern AT to serve some of the most vulnerable among us. It would violate the spirit of the law and its normative implications to eschew novel technologies that could further remediate the segregation of people with disabilities. Through our collaboration with BCH, we have seen the dedication of hospital administrators, clinicians, and therapists providing excellent care to children and their families. Among their robust services, inpatient and outpatient care, and a state-accredited public school, is the specialty AT clinic, which provides loaner devices to help bridge the gap between the trial period and the arrival of the device. However, even Blithedale does not have the resources to make iGaze devices, which can cost $15,000 or more, available during the waiting period, especially if it lasts 5 months. And what of the children and families who have never had access to the specialty care and advocacy that BCH offers? This is a deeper level of inequity that transcends the technology and speaks to a broader system of care. For these children, delays risk becoming denials. This is something society should neither allow nor accept. Former Vice President Hubert H. Humphrey reminds us it was once said that the moral test of government is how that government treats those who are in the dawn of life, the children, those who are in the twilight of life, the elderly, and those who are in the shadows of life, the sick, the needy, and the handicapped. These words, now enshrined in marble in the Department of Health and Human Services building that bears Humphrey's name, should be ensconced in policy to give voice to the voiceless. Anything less is not worthy of us and is a violation of civil rights. Kailani S. Shulman, B.A., graduated from Yale College with a distinction in religious studies. She is a research assistant in the Division of Medical Ethics at Weill Cornell Medical College and will start medical school in the fall. Joseph J. Finns, M.D., D. Hum Litt, M.A.C.P., F.R.C.P., is the E. William Davis, Jr., M.D., Professor of Medical Ethics, a Professor of Medicine and Chief of the Division of Medical Ethics at Weill Cornell Medical College. Solomon Center, Distinguished Scholar in Medicine, Bioethics and the Law, and a Visiting Professor of Law at Yale Law School, and a member of the Adjunct Faculty at the Rockefeller University. He is a Hastings Center Fellow and a Chair of the Center's Board of Trustees. Acknowledgements. The authors acknowledge the support of a pilot award from the Weill Cornell Medical College Clinical and Translational Science Center. Assistive technology in pediatric brain injury following inpatient rehabilitation. Access barriers and burdens on patients and families. The transcript number. And the Blithedale Children's Hospital. And the Monique Weill Collier Charitable Trust. We would like to acknowledge the collegiality and insights of the Assistive Technology and Brain Injury Research Team, including colleagues Debjani Mukherjee, Linda Gerber, and Jennifer Hirsch from Weill Cornell Medical College, and Barbara Don Levy-Hiller, Karen Conti, Julie Nitter, Rita Erlbaum, Marnina Ellis, Linda Feibach, William Watson, as well as the late Barbara Milch from Blythedale Children's Hospital. We are especially grateful for the visionary leadership of Jerry Levine, President and CEO of Blythedale Children's Hospital. From blazietech.com, that's spelled B-L-A-Z-I-E-T-E-C-H, July 16th, 2024, BT Speak System Upgrade, posted by BT Development Team. The update includes a possible fix for the occasional loss of speech that could happen after powering on your BT Speak. It also includes additional clock settings and the ability to install and remove text-to-speech engines. Temporary fix for occasional loss of speech after powering on. Step 1. Some customers have encountered the occasional loss of speech after powering on their BT Speak. Although this update doesn't completely resolve this problem, it does make it possible for you to easily resolve it. Step 2. It seems that loss of speech after a reboot can be triggered if the RH Voice and the Vocalizer TTS engines are both installed at the same time. The solution, at least for now, is to remove either RH Voice or the Vocalizer engine. The new TTS Manager, which can be found within the Speech Settings menu, allows you to do this. New TTS Text-to-Speech Manager. The TTS Manager allows you to either install or remove speech engines. You can get the TTS Manager by opening Options, System, System Administration, Settings, Speech. This menu provides options to install or remove Vocalizer voices and RH voice. In addition, we've also added the ability to install or remove the Pico and Festival Lite TTS engines. Pico is P-I-C-O, and Festival Lite is L-I-T-E. New clock settings. A new clock setting submenu has been added to the settings menu. O chord for options, S for system, S for system administration, S for settings, C for clock settings. It currently contains the following new options along with their respective shortcut keys. Say seconds, S. Time format, F. The other options in this menu, which we've had for a while, are set the time zone based on your internet address, I. Change the time zone, Z. Change the date, D. Change the time, T. Say seconds, S. The say seconds option has two choices, just say minutes and say minutes and seconds. If you set this option to just say minutes, the time will be spoken in a way that you might be more accustomed to. As an example, customers in the U.S. might hear something like 12:30 p.m. Time format, F. This option offers the following choices, local format, 24-hour mode, 12-hour mode. Miscellaneous fixes and improvements. Files with an MP4 extension can now be played in a traditional mode from the file browser. Locate a file with a .mp4 extension and press Enter to begin playing the file. Files with a .md or .rst extension can now be opened from the file browser. This should make it much easier for customers who use their BT Speak to compose and edit text using Markdown. When in desktop mode, we have added a command to temporarily disable Orca's speech. And I've run out of time for those updates. I hope you enjoyed today's reading of Vision News. I'm Doris Hyde, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's episode is underwritten by the Apex Lions Club, serving the community since 1937 by providing services and financial support for people who are blind, have low vision, or print disabilities. To learn more about the services provided by the Apex Lions Club, go to apexlions.org. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind, have low vision, or print disabilities. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. Call 919-